Do you think of yourself as an innovator? Many product managers do, but after teaching thousands of students and professionals, I can say that most don't initially understand the process of innovation. They may know aspects, but they don't have knowledge of how the pieces are integrated. This episode will change that, as you'll learn a practical innovation approach called Targeted Innovation Process. You won't want to miss this practical approach to product innovation. And two experts in Targeted Innovation Process join us, Jerry Fix and Terry Carroll. Jerry is an experienced marketing and product management professional with digital transformation experience who has successfully launched new products and transformed teams in retail, distribution, and OEM channels across a variety of markets. Terry has spent more than 20 years leading product management for B2B and B2B2C organizations across multiple companies, product categories, and industries. He is a passionate product leader and lifelong learner who enjoys sharing his knowledge, and we're thankful for that today, Terry. He currently leads product management for the refrigerated and frozen food display case portfolio for Hillphoenix Dover Food Retail. Let's jump in and learn the process of innovation.
How can you unlock your full potential as a product manager? We're sharing the product management insights you need. They are based on the 7 research-backed knowledge areas for product mastery. You'll learn to create products customers love, enhance your influence, and elevate your career. Welcome to Product Mastery Now, hosted by Dr. Chad McAllister, product management professor, practitioner, and your guide.
Jerry, Terry, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great
to
be here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Chad.
I wanted to just get started with a little context, right? As product managers, with your product management experience, how do you think about innovation in connection to product management?
Terry, want to take the first
one? Yeah, I'll jump in, take a first stab. I mean, really for me, Chad, it's all about getting close to the customer, understanding what their challenges are, understanding their needs. And it's not just what they tell me, but really it's getting into their environment, understanding their work surroundings and what they're up against on a day in, day out basis.
Mm-hmm. Very good. How about you, Jerry?
And I like to think about innovation as sort of feeding the funnel, if you will, right? With the funnel getting smaller as you go through the various stages of kind of refining an idea. I like to think of having a robust innovation process as filling that funnel with a lot of quality ideas that then as a product manager, you can begin to vet through the process that Terry talked about, right? Which is staying close to customers and understanding what the value is.
Absolutely. This probably, we should dive into just what innovation means to both of you as well, because to different people, it means different things. It's a term that often gets thrown around. I find myself typically throwing out a quick definition when I talk about innovation, just to make sure people know what context I'm in. What about you? What's your working definition for innovation?
For me, I'll take the first stab. And really, it's about creating a better mousetrap. I mean, it's that simple. It's about creating meaningful improvement to what's either currently available or something that's new and viable and adds real value for the customer.
Okay, the better mousetrap.
And Chad, you and I have kind of talked about this a little bit before when we talked about innovation. And I'm very much focused on this idea of translating ideas into value. So we've talked about before, there's often no lack of good ideas, or maybe I shouldn't qualify those as being good ideas, but there's lots of ideas out there. And for me, innovation takes a practical approach, which is translating those ideas into something that provides value.
Right. So both elements there kind of capture this value creation part, right? The better mousetrap is meaning that it's not just something that's already in existence in the marketplace. It's something that is creating new value in some way for customers and actually taking action on ideas to see that value realized. Let's dive into targeted innovation process, which just like listeners, I know nothing about right now. I know about innovation processes. I'm curious how you guys have formulated this. First, maybe just where does this name come from? That might be helpful to understand. And then we'll talk about the actual process.
Yeah. So actually, there's a great book called Making Creativity Practical. One of the authors is a guy named Sylvester Taylor. And he kind of initially proposed this idea of how do we take traditional innovation processes, which again, in my experience, often are very front-loaded on generating ideas, and how do we make it so that the practical output of it is things that can actually be worked on value that can actually be created. So it's not necessarily a whole new way of thinking about innovation. It's taking kind of an existing body of understanding around innovation and pulling out those parts of it that make it more practical. And that's at the PDMA conference, Terry and I are speaking specifically about what Terry calls, which I love, everyday innovation, right? And I've sort of taken that and looked at it from a standpoint of practical innovation. But the two things are definitely connected to each other.
Okay, yeah, the practical nature is what we want to get to for sure. When I talk to students and also as practitioners who are practicing product managers, they may not have a good framework for innovation, and there is a process that we can follow, and it can be fairly straightforward. I like the connection to everyday innovation because the podcast used to be called The Everyday Innovator.
Yes.
And I think when Jerry, you were on a few years ago, I think that was the name. We have since rebranded. But I think we all like there's something compelling about this notion that innovation is all around us as product people. We think of ourselves perhaps as everyday innovators. Let's dive into the process. Where do we start with this targeted innovation process?
So I guess what I'll do is I'll go through the framework real quickly. And mm-hmm. then I think it might be good. I don't know. At some point, I definitely want to make sure that, Terry takes us through kind of how that works in a real world example, right?
Which is really the big
part of what we're going to be talking about. So the framework for what's called targeted innovation, none of it's rocket surgery, as I would like to say, but it's taking a lot of existing frameworks and processes around innovation and trying to tease out those parts that are going to translate it into something that's a bit more practical. Sure. So the first part is like stating the problem, right? So do that kind of in an open-ended way, invite lots of input to that and a huge range of potential solutions, right? And when you start digging into, which we won't have time today, but as you start digging into some of these steps, we talk about all the different ways that we can encourage that kind of sort of creative input. And then the next part, and this is where it gets to be a bit more practical, which is you need to understand the different problem-solving styles, right? So recognizing the difference between like incremental improvements versus breakaway approaches to problem-solving, right? And again, we won't go into a lot of detail, but there are entire bodies of knowledge around problem-solving techniques. And one thing that this framework encourages you to do is understand which of these fits the idea that you're discussing and which of these fits your organization, right? Not every organization is going to be good at all the different styles of problem solving. So understand what you're good at and what's going to be most effective for the problem that you're trying to solve. The third part is what they call creating creative pathways, right? So there's these pathways to problem solving. They call like one is direct, one is supplemental, one is modification, one is tangential. And so these are different ways to connect ideas with the path to innovation, right? The path to value. Mm-hmm. Then the last two parts are much more traditional, right? Generate ideas, right? So use all the techniques that are out there to generate lots of ideas, keeping in mind the problem-solving style, right? That's good for your organization. And then the last part of it is evaluate those ideas, right? Vet those ideas. There's lots of tools you can use to screen those ideas, synthesize maybe more than one together, and then kind of select some promising ones, right? And at that point, you're at a point in the funnel where now a more traditional product lifecycle process takes over, right? So now you've got some ideas, and now you may prototype, you may test before you begin to do the rest of the sort of the product lifecycle. So that's kind of like that five steps of this targeted innovation process.
The pieces of the framework. Yes. And let me just go through them briefly with you. So we start with stating the problem, which it seems obvious, I'm sure, to everyone listening, right? Well, of course, you start with the problem.
Right.
Often, the, you know, I don't remember your background, Jerry, and Terry, we haven't talked about this in detail yet. Mine's engineering, right? And a lot of people come into product management through engineering. A lot of people come in through marketing. We tend to be different places. But as an engineer, we are fundamentally taught to solve problems. And this kind of tends to be human nature. And as soon as we hear anything that sounds like a problem, we're on to the solution, which short circuits, in my opinion, short circuits the innovation process. So this first thing is kind of important to state the problem and, like you said, invite a wide range of inputs on that problem. So that's where we're starting, yep. Right?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
And then we got understanding the problem-solving styles and how we think through this. We'll tease that apart a little bit more, maybe in an example here. We'll want to think about that incremental approach and breakthrough approach and the like. And right. Then we had the creative pathways to problem solving.
Right.
And I don't know if this, but when you said that, I thought of tools like Scrum and you said gentle thinking, these things that get us to maybe break out of our common thinking patterns to look at things differently. Does that apply?
Yeah, so that applies. And the other way, these pathways are somewhat related to those problem solving approaches we might take, whether it's incremental or breakaway, right? And so some of those things that are included in that area are things that are relatively, and this is the practical part of it, right? So we need to consider, are there time constraints? Are there budget constraints, right? So this is where, this is a little bit different than blue sky type of innovation where it's like time and budget be darned, just whatever the best thing is, that the best idea, that's what we're going to do. This sort of targeted approach encourages you to potentially consider some of those things that in a pure innovation process might be considered, who knows, right? We don't want to put any constraints on the idea generation process, right? And for some types of innovation thinking, that's the way to go. Again, right. What's different about this is very specific, intended to be more targeted, more practical, right? And so they're going to encourage you to think about budget and time. What's the acceptable risk, right, that you're willing to take within mm-hmm. the organization? So a lot of the things that you would get to, let's say, farther into the product lifecycle process, this targeted thing kind of pulls it forward a little bit, right, to try to encourage thinking about them up front so that there's a higher likelihood that you will be successful and also a higher likelihood that you're going to settle on something that has practical uses and is likely to translate into value, right? Sooner rather than later.
Right.
So yeah, that's the idea, is just to pull in some of those things you might think of later on, pulling some of those things into the innovation process.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Constraints actually help us in innovation a lot, right? And that's part of stating the problem is understanding the constraints of the system we're working within. And then we don't waste our time in areas that we're not going to be able to do anything about.
Right. Because what I often say is none of us, or very few of us, work for charities, right? So the companies we work for, we have to deliver value because value translates into revenue. Revenue translates into a happy set of shareholders and so on and so forth, right? So yeah,
absolutely.
Taking constraints into account and being able to translate that into value is really important.
Yeah, yeah. And the same applies to the nonprofits too. If you're not keeping your donors satisfied with the value right. you're creating for your end users, you're not going to be able to survive long. And then we're generating, based on all this now, we're generating lots of ideas to solve that problem that we stated in the very beginning and not just running with the first thing that comes to our mind. So we're considering alternatives, the best way to get there. And then we do the evaluation part. So five-part framework, like that this has a practical feel to it, right? We're dealing with the constraints up front and considering the problem clearly, alternatives, and then evaluating those alternatives for us. And I hope you have an example that we can walk through to make this a little more tangible to all of us about how we apply this.
Yeah, so I'm going to now let kind of Terry talk about the case study that we have. And now the case study, again, just like everything, this targeted innovation process, it's a framework, right? And so not every part of it is used every time and every way for every situation. But I think you'll see as Terry walks through his example that was the approach, whether anyone really knew that this was targeted innovation, right, or not, that was the end result of what Terry worked on.
Yeah, very good. Okay, Terry, take us through that.
Yeah, I'll take you through it. And I want to start by saying I work for a number of companies across different industries, different product categories. And when we're talking about getting to the customer problem, you hear the buzzword voice of customer thrown around a lot. And what I found out over the years is sometimes that's the voice of the sales team. And sometimes that becomes the proxy, or it's the voice of someone in the executive leadership team that really has a relationship with the customer. And you kind of get pigeonholed into someone else's voice instead of the true voice of the customer. So the example that we're going to walk through at the PDMA conference is a real life development project that I helped to lead. And it really started with, we start with a hypothesis. Anytime you're out there, you have a hypothesis around what the problem is. But what we did in this example, and I think it's what makes it in my mind kind of a classic ideal state innovation project, we started with truly identifying the job to be done. We talked with 30 different customers, and I found that to be quite unusual over the course of my career, that you would talk with 30 different individual customers. We set up 90-minute one-on-one sessions with each of these customers. We had obviously a discussion guide that we walked them through, but depending on the nature of how things flowed and questions that got asked, we can kind of walk you a little bit around that, sticking strictly to the script. We went through video recording these sessions. We had different people from the product team and the marketing team kind of taking notes. We use competitive samples. Again, this was an existing product category, so we wanted to understand kind of the pros and cons of what they're using today. And sometimes having a physical sample or a physical prototype in the room really does help people to express themselves well. Mm-hmm. For the new product concept that we had 3D printed prototypes, at the end of the day, we took all of this information in, we kind of synthesized it, and ultimately summarize what the key findings were. And those key findings ended up being really the value drivers that this whole program got built around. And that was really, in this case, it was tool durability. Durability was a huge concern for the stakeholders that we're talking about. Ease of use was another key element that was important to these stakeholders. And in this instance, avoiding slip and fall accidents or risk mitigation around, hey, how can we make sure that we create a program that cleans better so that it helps to avoid the risk of someone falling and getting injured? We also went through, and this is where some of the innovation really came out. We really looked at the cleaning process, and we simplified that process from a three-step process to a two-step process, which, again, was a real resonator and value driver for these customers, because oftentimes in commercial restaurants, they're getting cleaned at the end of the shift. And sometimes that's 11 o'clock at night, and employees, all they're wanting to do is to get out and get home. So if you can cut a step out of the process while also making it more effective, that really resonated with the people that were using this product. And then the last one was really aesthetics.
Yep. Before we get to aesthetics too, tell us just about this product. It sounds like it's a floor cleaning product of some sort. Give us more of a description just so we have a good
idea. Yeah, it's really as basic as that. It's a floor cleaning system. It includes a mop bucket. And there was some innovation that we created even around the mop bucket in terms of creating a dirty water bucket and separating that from the other water, which often gets mixed in the process. Yep. So you're starting to put dirty water back on the floor. So we kept those, the clean and the dirty, separated. We had a sign holder on this. We had the deck scrub brush. We had the squeegee, the mop, the floor cleaning, the sweeps, if you will. And we created it all around a what I would call a universal system that allowed customers to only throw away the use components. They didn't have to throw the entire tool away. It was only those things that got used or consumed, like a razor blade type of program. So very different from what was out there in the marketplace when we started this. When you think about something like floor cleaning, to me, I was coming out of the high design contract office furniture space, and I was kind of got recruited into this space by a former manager, and it was not the most exciting product, let me tell you. But I think through the process and understanding how what we created could improve people's lives and the jobs that had to be done, it got me excited. And it ultimately led to some significant innovation, both from a utility patent, design patent, and process patents.
Okay, very good. And that is exciting, right? As you're talking about, it's like, we're making a difference for people cleaning floors. This is a big deal, right? Trying to simplify the process, improving it, maybe driving some costs out of the process as well, because we all appreciate clean floors. And as innovators, we get excited when we can actually create value for a group.
Exactly.
Okay. So like I did before, I kind of like to break this down and get some more details about how this started. So I don't know if you two wanted to go somewhere else, but like I would like to understand that initial work interviewing those 30 customers. How did you find them? You talked a little bit about getting examples from how they do their work today and the like, but tell us how we get into that if we need to interview people.
Yeah, actually, the way this worked is we worked for a Fortune 500 company. They're a big player in the restaurant industry, in hospitality industry. And we already had a huge customer base, national players in the restaurant space, both full serve and quick serve. So we had products that we were selling to these customers. We had strong relationships with them. So that's kind of how we started and started targeting. We wanted to make sure that we were targeting and talking to large national players that had lots of locations, ultimately had a lot to win or a lot to lose, depending on the outcome of the programs that we were undertaking. So it was fairly easy to identify, looking at our biggest customers and the ones that we're selling current solutions to. And we didn't really feel like the current product that we had out in the marketplace was what I would call representative of our brand. So we're trying to create a premium, kind of a good, better, best. And this was an effort to create that best type of solution.
Okay. Yeah. So the two key things for takeaways for me there was you had access to customers, which is great, but you also focused on the right market segment. And sometimes we forget to put those two together, right? It's like, well, sure, we know people we can talk to, but they need to represent the right market target segment.
That's absolutely right. So we're making sure that we're talking to those customers that really represented the entire industry, but were certainly in the core target market for who we were going after.
Okay. And it sounds like you learned a lot just about the process, right? You learned some things there to simplify the existing cleaning process. I'm also curious about the prototypes, because I think we all probably agree that the value of prototypes is very high when you get something physically put into people's hands. But if we do that too early, we can also kind of short circuit the learning that we need as innovators. Tell us more about how you use the prototypes.
Yeah, absolutely. We started out with the initial concept prototypes when we did the first round of Voice of Customer. We brought the 30 customers through and we talked through kind of what we had envisioned for what this new solution might look like, getting their input on what they liked, what they didn't like. But ultimately, we came back out of this and we took the learnings from this to refine that prototype. And instead of going to hard tools immediately, we decided to create soft tools and put those back in the hands of a dozen of the 30 customers that we talked with. We created where we could get like 1,000 tools off of or 1,000 parts off of each tool and put those into service or into practice in these restaurants for a 900 day period. And then we went around to each of these 12 locations on a weekly basis, observing people using the product, talking about it, providing feedback. And that was probably the biggest learning that we had. And actually, there was a cost associated with that.
Sure.
But there was great value in some of the key takeaways that came out of what we would just call beta testing.
Yep, absolutely. Describe soft tools for us. When you gave people these things to use.
Yeah, soft tools, instead of being out of hard steel, they were cut out of aluminum. So you get less shots out of the parts. So that's what we call a soft tool.
Yeah. So the final manufactured product for expected durability over its life, this is something that is representative, functional for sure, but
functional, exactly.
Yeah, it isn't going to hold up like the expected manufacturer at the end. Okay,
I might add, Terry and I have been talking about the sort of the ongoing evolution of that, right? So Terry and I kind of similar industries in the past, right? And the both the turnaround time, et cetera, of hard tool, soft tool, et cetera, et cetera. Now we talk about 3D printing, right, to create prototypes. So now waiting for tooling, which is often done offshore, doesn't even necessarily have to be part of the equation for early prototypes, right? Now we print them on our desktop, essentially.
Yep, very good. Okay, yeah, we have more options. Okay, so this process starts with interviews, a deep understanding of the customers, the problem, interacting with prototypes, and actually doing the work through like a beta test to get feedback, and acting on that feedback to make the product better. And along the way, learning how we can might simplify maybe the solution management of the customer, in this case, simplifying the cleaning process for them. I cut you off earlier when you started talking about aesthetics, but it sounds like that's an aspect of this that has to work for the customer in some pleasing manner.
It is, because if you've ever been in the back of a commercial kitchen and you look at the tools that many restaurants use and other hospitality facilities as well, they're not exactly something that you're going to anxiously go grab and have any level of pride in using. So aesthetics became an important element in terms of really making the cleaning job a little less daunting. And mm-hmm. and if you saw the new tools that we came up with compared to what they were currently using, this was two ends of the spectrum. So we wanted to create something that really was reflective of our company's value and our brand, but also more importantly, the customer's brand, because mm-hmm. some of these tools are used out in the front of the house, out where they're having patrons and whatnot, say a spill happens and you have to go out and clean it up. You don't want something that looks that you're going to be ashamed of. You want something that, hey, is reflective of your brand.
Right.
That was an outcome we were not expecting. I mean, that we really didn't envision that. That was strictly something that came out of the voice of customer.
Okay. Yeah, I did have those restaurant jobs in high school and college, and the mop bucket that's kept back in the closet, you don't even want to touch it. It's terribly exactly. scary, gross.
It was kept back there for a reason. The exactly, reason it was in the back, hidden, yes.
And it was usually my job to put it to use.
Yeah, the interesting thing is the system we created, like I said, the what I will call the consumables, whether that be a mop, a sweep, or a squeegee, we created a universal holder for those. And even for a dirty, wet, nasty mop, you actually, when you get through using it, you can squeeze a release button on the universal holder and it just drops that insert out. So you don't actually have to touch it. And you actually can slide it back on without physically touching it as well. So there was a lot of innovation in this that I think the organization and the customer started to get really excited about. It was, out of many things that I've done, it was kind of a textbook classic example.
Excellent. Yeah. And another key takeaway for me listening to this is that none of this happened in a vacuum. Sometimes there's this myth about innovators are just super brilliant, creative people. They go into a dark office and they come out with insights. We're talking to customers about their problem and we're trying to just add value to accomplishing the thing that they want to do to solve that problem. So that's really good. Yeah. Okay, I have one more question for you that comes from a listener which regards justifying innovation programs. But first, listeners, in this episode, we've learned some of the aspects of the innovation process. And process is just one of the seven knowledge areas for professional product managers that you need to have for product mastery. And how do you learn all the elements and strengthen what you already know? Well, I do have a solution for you. It is organized by seven research-backed knowledge areas, and it's called the Rapid Product Mastery Experience, the RPM Experience. I've created this for individuals and for organizations to use. It builds upon your existing product management skills and also allows you to earn professional certification from PDMA. That's the International Association for Product Managers and Product Innovators that we alluded to before. Both Terry and Jerry will be at the annual conference talking on this topic some more there. But this training system, it prepares you for greater success and your next career step. And if you're serious about growing your own career, about creating more value for customers and improving your team, then the RPM experience is something you should check out. Also, if you're a product VP or CPO, you can use the RPM experience to further develop your product managers and product teams. Go to productmasterynow.com to learn more about that training and to get started. Once again, that's productmasterynow.com. So, gentlemen, the question from a listener was about this notion of justifying innovation programs in companies. Many organizations will think about innovation in terms of operations and are incrementally improving things over time, which is important. We need to do that. That does work well. But not think about what's that next new idea that might be future revenue for the organization, right? Because all products have a life cycle and they're going to die in the marketplace at some point. But it looks like innovation programs, as this person said, are one of the things that first gets cut when times get tough, right? When costs for the organization gets reduced. What metrics should we be looking at or using to help justify innovation programs?
You want to go, Terry, first? You want me to go?
You jump in and I'll cover anything that you don't on this one.
Okay. So this is a great question. What's the... what John Doerr's idea of like what gets measured, right, gets managed, or things, if you don't measure it, you can't improve it. And so it's important, but KPIs can also be a crutch, right? Because you could come up with a way to measure just about anything you want. One thing that I like, and I can't remember who the author is, but there's a book out there which talks about what they call the return on ideas, right? Which is, okay, how do we make innovation pay? Right? How do we show that innovation is worth the effort, right? And so there's a couple KPIs that I do like, but this idea of return on ideas, I love that premise, right? And the basic premise there is that the funnel process is inefficient and that instead of whittling ideas down, you should start with a lot of quality ideas and then build them up from, rather than whittling it down to a winner, take a lot of good ideas and begin to add to them, right? Flesh them out, build them out, to start seeing which ones rise to the top, right? Rather than trying to whittle the list down, right? Now that requires rethinking how you go about the whole process, right? You've got to have a lot of high quality ideas. You've got to commit to putting some effort into building out what these ideas look like, how they might be commercialized, et cetera, et cetera. But the end result is that your return on that is often much better than your return on starting with a whole bunch of mixed quality ideas and trying to whittle them down to two. Mm-hmm. That being said, some of the KPIs that I like for innovation, I like to look at, I'm a traditional product manager historically, so revenue and P&Ls, right, have an important part, right, in my thinking. And so there are some what I would call leading indicators, which would be anticipated revenue, right, from, you know, the ideas. But then there's a lagging indicator, which is you should track what you actually did generate from some of these ideas that were translated into actual products, right? So you've got these leading and lagging indicators. The other thing I like is I like this idea of, and there's no clear way to measure it, but the amount, the number of ideas that are being created relative to the number that end up making their way into the product development process. I also like to look at that. That's kind of a measure of the quality of the ideas up front, right? If you are spending time generating 100 ideas and only two of them end up getting any sort of attention in the product development process, you may need to spend more time on trying to generate quality ideas. So that ratio makes a bit more sense. Again, there's probably dozens of KPIs, but those are some of the ones I like. And again, I love this idea of looking at return on ideas.
Very good. Thanks, Jerry. Terry, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll add just a couple of things. I mean, according to a relatively recent McKinsey study, 84% of executives say that their future success is dependent upon innovation.
Right.
And their 2022 global survey that they did found that the top 10% of companies earn twice as much in revenue from products and services that did not exist a year ago. So new products truly are the lifeblood of organizations. When I think about metrics, probably the one that's pretty common across most product management focused organizations is Vitality Index, looking at the business case. What are we doing? Are we on track with what we said we would deliver? And if we're not, how do we recalibrate and get things back on track? But that's kind of a measure of new product sales versus a percentage of your total product or your total sales as an organization. And that's a key metric that most organizations I work for look at.
And I love that one. That's a favorite of mine as well. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like 20% of our revenue comes from products created in the last 3 years.
Right. Exactly.
It's a great number to have.
That's a great one.
Good. Thank you for the responses. For listeners that might want to look into another framework too, I've come across Eric Ries and others, but Eric Ries created the Innovation Accounting Framework that has, it's kind of like a maturity model. There's three levels where you kind of just like, let's start with what we can track. Let's move to the next level of things that we think we should be tracking that are more leading indicators that if we do these things, they'll result in what we want. Like weight loss, if I count calories, I'm going to lose weight at the end. Right. And then the top level is that thing that's really, I forget what he calls it. It has a funny name, like NPV metrics, but it's not, it doesn't mean net present value in terms of finances. It's that thing that magically, if you discover, that will lead you to success. And like Facebook, the example from them was, what was it? If in, I think it's 10 friends in 7 days, I might have that backwards, right? But it was, they discovered that the people that stayed on their system and were profitable for Facebook were ones that would get a certain number of friends within a certain period of time. And so that's what they then worked to make that happen, right? So Innovation Accounting Framework, you can find details on that as well. Thank you for thinking through that a little bit with us. We like innovation quotes. I think you both have one for us. Terry, you want to share yours first?
Sure. Mine is pretty simple. It's the best way to predict the future is to invent it. That's by Alan Kay. Very simple, but I think very practical. From when you're thinking about innovation, the way organizations get there is they have to invent their way forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. As you said, it is the lifeblood, certainly a future revenue. And Jerry, how about you?
Well, you probably remember a couple of years ago when we did one, I had a quote that was something around, I think it was, innovation or ideas without execution are just daydreaming. Or I think the actual Thomas Edison quotes, he called those hallucinations, which I don't know if it's quite that extreme. But I am very, and we've talked about this before, right? I'm very hung up on this idea that it's great to have a lot of good ideas, but if you can't translate those into value, right, then kind of what's the purpose? And so it's another Thomas Edison quote. And it's like, so the quote is, the value in an idea lies in the using of it, right? So implying that it's great to have ideas, but the actual value of that idea is when you actually start to do something with it, use it, improve it, et cetera. So Thomas Edison is apparently a great, great source of quotes on innovation.
Apparently. So you're 2 for 2 at the moment.
I'm 2 for 2 with Thomas Edison. Yeah.
That's great. Well, we'll have you back in a couple of years and see what other Thomas Edison
quotes you can find another one, right?
Right. Well, this is excellent. So glad to talk about innovation process with both of you. For people that want to find out more about the work that you're doing, reach out, anything like that, how can we do that? Jerry, kick us off.
Yeah, really easy. If you go to my LinkedIn profile, which is just Jerry Fix, like one word at the end of the slash, you'll get my profile there. All my contact information is there, et cetera, et cetera. I would encourage anyone to do that, right? Because then you've got multiple ways to contact me.
Excellent. And Terry, how about you?
Yeah, same. You can connect with me through LinkedIn, or certainly if you have the opportunity to attend the upcoming PDMA Inspire Innovation Conference in September the 14th through the 17th over in St. Louis, we'd love to see you in our session.
Fantastic. And I will be there as well. It is the annual conference. I very much look forward to each year and find great value. And so both of your LinkedIn profiles are simply your name. So Terry Carroll with 2 R's and 2 L's. and Jerry Fix, F-I-X on the end there. This is fantastic. Thank you for helping us learn a little bit about innovation process, demystifying this notion of innovation, that there is a process that we can learn and apply. For everyone that wants to find a written summary of what we talked about, we do create a article version of this for you, and you'll find that resource at productmasterynow.com/506. Everyone, keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.